Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two. And let me reach for Richie. And Casey and I were just going back and forth a little bit. And we'll get Rich, see what his weekend entailed. And yeah, Rich Migliori is going to join us here just momentarily. And Richie, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Steve?
I'm all right. I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure if you were on the air Saturday, and but I guess you were off yesterday.
Yeah, actually, I'm been off until the 26th, and then I kind of start back pretty much full time again.
Okay, good. Good. Well,
so yeah. So I've been living the life of leisure, going to plays and visiting with friends and
nice. Listen, that's fine. Well, plus it's cleanup time on the farm. Let's be honest. This
man,
right?
I'm telling you what, it's depressing. You know, like you just get this time of year, it's mucky and muddy, and it's just no fun at all. But I got a big hay delivery coming today, so I'm excited about that. It's, you know, the little things in life. And yesterday, my friend Robert Montano, who's a very accomplished actor, was a jockey. He opened his one-man show, Small, at the Penguin Repertoire Theater in Stony Point. So I got to go to that, and it was incredible. Absolutely incredible. He's so talented, and the story is amazing. I'm really looking forward to seeing how people receive it. I just think it's phenomenal.
You had hinted about this, I don't know, maybe a month ago or so or more, and give us a little. I saw a couple of tweets and a couple of photographs, and I'm glad you brought it up. So you might as well tell everybody.
All right. So Robert he grew up near Belmont Park in West Hempstead. Wound up becoming friends. He was the paper boy for Sue and Bob Duncan, and begged them to take him to the track in the morning. They took him. He wound up working for Mickey Prager. Wanted to be a jockey. Robert Pineda is the one who kind of mentored him. And he got to ride a few races and just outgrew it. He was just too big to do it. And he was really heartbroken. You know, this is like he's had a couple of different versions of this show. And the thing I told him that I thought he needed to concentrate on was the reinventing himself and how he was able to finally go, okay, I can't be a rider, but I can still do some cool things, which he went on to do. Obviously, he was in Cats on Broadway, the Vienna troupe of Cats for 2 years. Then he went to Broadway. I mean, it's just a phenomenal story. Anyway, he's been in, you know, all kinds of TV shows, Law and Order, Sex and the City. He's been in movies, others with Mark Wahlberg. But he became Mephistopheles in Cats. He became Bernardo in West Side Story. And this is his journey in trying to, first he was a kid being bullied because he was smaller than everybody else in school. Then he realized he wants to be a jockey, and he's praying to God to be small. And that's hence the name Small. And his journey of trying, he rode 7 races. He never won a race, outgrew it. And how he was able to kind of lift himself up that of the depression of not being able to do what his passion was and finding a whole new passion. And the guy is phenomenally talented. Like he went into all this dance stuff. He's an amazing dancer. Cheetah Rivera, he was in Kiss of the Spider with her. He was Catherine Zeta-Jones' dance partner in Chicago in the movie. So, like, this one-man show is just incredible. Like, just watching him move, dancing and explaining how he got through, you know, just this, you know. And listen, I get it more than anybody. I got to ride for over 29 years.
Right.
And it still was hard. I didn't want to let it go. Here was a guy who only got to ride 7 races. Frank Pagano, the trainer that put him on his first winner, was there at the play yesterday. He and I went and had lunch together. And it was just a really a great celebration of what he's been able to do with his life since not being able to be a rider. His 89-year-old mother was able to make it up for it. It was just a really phenomenal day. So I knew of Robert when I came around. He was galloping horses. He's a little bit older than I am. And he always looked like the cool guy. And then you started hearing stories. Oh, yeah, after he gets done galloping horses, he runs to Manhattan for auditions and this and that. And kind of we knew each other to say hi. And I was out riding in California in 2007. And I'm walking back to the jockey's room. And I hear say, Rich, is Robert, Robert Montano, how are you? And we got to talking. And we kind of became friends then. He was out there shooting a movie. And that summer we got to Del Mar and he was telling me how he kept all his stuff. He still has the riding pants with his name on the back. And so I told him, we were down at Del Mar. I said, bring those pants. I want to see them. And I took his pants and I said, I'm wearing these today. Your pants are going to be in the winner's circle. So I won 2 races that day in his jockey pants. So I tease him. You never got to ride a winner, but your pants made it to the winner's circle.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. Oh my gosh! I saw you mention that you figure this will work its way to at least to off Broadway, right?
That's right now. It seems like they're going to get picked up for off Broadway. It's gotten incredible reception because it was like a soft open just for, I guess some investors and people and things, and then yesterday was the actual debut of it. And I got to tell you, the team they put together, the lighting, the sound effects, you know, he talks about he was like, 11 years old and his mother, he was at church with his mom and she's like, come on, we got to hurry up. We got to get new tiles. And he's like, new tiles. So they go to Belmont. She's like, you get tiles here? And he had passed it on Hempstead Turnpike, never been in there. And she goes, if we pick the right one, we do. And they wound up. And the funny thing is the horse – and he's got the programs and stuff. Mindy's Patrol won the race with Robert Pineda. That's how he became enamored with Pineda. Pineda was riding for Mickey Prager and took him under his wing. And it goes into when Robert Pineda was killed at Pimlico in that accident. You know, how that devastated him. And the story is so great. And the play itself is so great because it doesn't shy away from the underbelly of this. It doesn't shy away from the grit and the toughness of it. But it's laced with so much humor. You know, his mother being a spicy Latin lady and, saying, we got to pray to God for tiles and then run into the track and how much she loved the track. And I mean, and you just had people laughing throughout the whole thing. I mean, and then there are parts, believe me, I was teared up because, knowing that desperation, there's a loneliness about being a rider because you're not part of a team. I mean, I guess you are in a way, the trainer, the owner, the stable, but most of the time you're the most disposable part of the team. And you feel like when you're losing or you give a bad ride or you make a mistake, you've let these people down. And if you're care about it and you want to be good at it, you take that serious, and there's no one to share that hurt with. There's no one to go cry on their shoulder about it. You kind of keep it in and hold it together. And then people, I think, when you're not doing well, don't want to reach out to you because they feel like they're bothering you. And that's when you need to hear from. We've talked about this, the whole jockey psychology thing. So watching him, like he went to Atlantic City trying to get mounts, and he articulated something so well that he was standing by the paddock and he would just stay there all night through the races in case somebody couldn't ride or got hurt and then maybe there was an open mount. And even if he didn't have mounts, he would stay for the entire card just in case somebody needed a rider. And yet watching them nine races, leave the paddock and going, why can't I be out there doing what they're doing? Why am I not getting that opportunity? And of course, part of it was he was the kid that was struggling so hard with his weight, and people recognized that. And he was a great exercise rider, incredible exercise rider. And he's still close with Mickey Preger and Mickey's son, Mickey Jr. He has a love and appreciation for the track that, you know, we have, that, you know, he's a racetracker, but he found another way to express himself. And it's really a phenomenal show. I'm almost 100% sure it'll wind up on Off-Broadway. And to see the support that he got from, obviously there were people from the racing community, myself and Frank Pagano, but also from, you know, the theater and actors and dancers and people that he was in the Vienna troupe of Cats with before he got called up to Broadway to do it, were there for him. I mean, it was really just an absolutely perfect Sunday.
Really cool. I wanted you to flesh that out. And so I'm glad you got a chance. And I got to ask my brother, you know, who's a Broadway press agent, and yeah, they can. Yeah, see where this thing goes.
Yeah, it's cool, and you know, like he brings up names of people and different things. Oh, I started to say, so the horse Mindy's Patrol that won that day, and they were able to buy the tiles. I groomed that horse at Lakeview Farms. He would come out to Bill George wound up claiming him. He owned Lakeview Farms, and what Bill would do is his horses. You know, back then horses ran every week, every other week, right? They would run their horses hard when they were in good form. And then when they were tired, they'd come to the farm for a month or so out in Yaphank, Long Island. And it's so funny that me at like 12 years old groomed Mindy's Patrol on one of his layoffs from the racetrack at the farm, you know, and that was the horse that basically hooked him into, like, he was enamored with racing after that.
That's pretty funny. There's no shortage, and for those that are wondering if they can see it, you can't right now, right? It was a 3-day Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, and I, you know what, I don't know if they added a day or two. I've got to reach out to Robert this morning. We didn't get to talk. Like, we talked briefly afterwards, and I had to get back here because no one was home. I had to take care of the horses, but there's a couple other stops they're making though, and. Again, the brief conversation I had with him yesterday, it's not going to be too long. I think you'll see it on Off-Broadway, and absolutely so worth the effort to go see it. Like I said, the sound effects are amazing. Even like, you know, how when they get to Belmont and they walk through by the tunnel and they look like Yankee Stadium, the green grass, and then the call to the post, and it puts you there. I mean, believe me, there are a couple times I had goosebumps, and I lived that life, and so to give me goosebumps, you know, it had to be pretty damn good. And Trevor McCarthy lent him a saddle, so he's got one of his saddles on the saddle rack there. Steve Coffin sent him a saddle to use for it. He still got his equipment. He pulls out the jockey pants at one point. And he holds him up, and you know, he's a decent sized guy. He's not huge, but very athletic. And he goes, and these, I used to fit in these. And like, you know, the audience cracks it. He engages. It's like really a really fun. I mean, it was 85 minutes long, and it felt like it was 15 minutes.
Well, I got some details. There is another four performances this week, and starting on Thursday, there's a Thursday and a Friday night performance. Thursday 7:00, Friday 7:30. There is Saturday and Sunday matinees. There's a 4:00 matinee on Saturday and a 2:00 matinee on Sunday. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and we're talking about Stony Point, the Penguin Rep Theater in Rockland County.
Yeah, and also I'll give people a hint, if they actually do make the trip, it's like off of exit 15 up the Palisades Parkway. Go to Hudson Mills to eat. We went and had brunch there yesterday before the show. It was phenomenal.
The show, thanks to Jay Hubdy for the prompt, small. And I'm going to put the link up right now above Richie's comments from yesterday. So you've got everything in one place. And there we go. All right. So those of you, and it's really not from upstate, too. It's an easy trip. down to exit 15, which, of course, is Harriman. And you got Dining Push. You know, Rich, I'm going to ask you a funny question about that vicinity.
Yeah.
Anybody ever know anybody that lived in Tuxedo Park?
No, not Tuxedo Park. You know, Carmela grew up in Rockland County, my wife, but in New City, which is about 6 or 7 miles
sure.
from Stony Point.
Well,
but no, not aware of anybody from Tuxedo Park.
Well, because you can't. It's not like a little town you can just drive into. There's a gate, and it's,
oh, okay,
yeah, it's a gated community, and it is literally where the word tuxedo. Intrinsically tied. It's an enclave, essentially. And I'm going to imagine that there's people in racing that live in Tuxedo Park, but I've never heard anybody mention. So it's right there as well. I tried once, and they said,
that whole area, though, Steve, is like, yeah, I love American history. I'm a big history buff, and so much went on with the Revolutionary War in that area. And you've got like the church where General Andre, I cannot remember names right now, but he surrendered to Washington's troops there. Right across the river, directly across, is the path that Benedict Arnold took to get down to a boat to take him to the Vulture, to escape, you know, after he was, you know, a spy and committed treason. And I mean, I love that. You just go through there. And one thing New York State's done a great job of is having all these plaques everywhere commemorating.
Sure.
You know, where different things happen. So even yesterday when I got there a bit early, I was going to meet Frank for lunch. And I got to explore the Stony Point battlefield, which was a big battle. Anthony Wayne, you know, people know like Anthony Wayne service area off the Garden State Parkway or Anthony Wayne State Park up there. Well, he was a general under George Washington, and he took the fort at Stony Point. Eventually had to relinquish it back, but you know, it was like a pivotal battle in the Revolutionary War. I mean, so like for me, I liked that. You know, I kind of knew I wanted to get there early so I can meander around and look at different things. And if people can do it, trust me, they will appreciate it. It'll be a really pleasant afternoon or evening if they can get there.
Nice. Well, I will put this out here when I get a moment, and all the details, including a link directly to buy tickets, actually. And Robert Montano's Small, a one-man play, and always engaging to, you know, if you've never seen these kinds of shows. You know, this could be a hook. This could get you, this could turn you into a, you know, into a buff, into a Broadway buff.
Well, again, like I said, I've been living a very civilized lifestyle the last few weeks because I haven't been working. I was supposed to work not this past Saturday, the Saturday before, but because of the storm and everything, I wound up getting stuck up here. So now my next show is, I just work Saturday, and then April, it kind of starts pretty much that, you know, minimum of 3 days a week. And then when Belmont starts, it's every racing day. In Saratoga, I'll be a minimum of 3 days a week. So it's, you know, this has been a nice reprieve. Like you said, catching up on farm work. My cooking game is strong, Steve. I perfected my braised short ribs. Carmela's just raving about them. So I know they're good because she doesn't lie to me about my, if I fail at cooking, she lets me know.
I love it. Well, I need the Brujol. That's my thing. I want Brujol.
All right. Well, you know what? She's got the greatest Brujol recipe. So I'll have her, because she knows it's in her head. I'll have her write it out or type it out, and I'll print it and I'll get it to you. Her Brujol. Oh my God.
Well,
and then you know, I went to Danbury, Connecticut, to the William Sonoma Star, and I, you know, went crazy buying new cookware and La Crusade stuff. And I have like five or six really good, you know, different Dutch ovens and La Crusade, but I bought the biggest one I ever bought. And that's what I did the short ribs the other day.
Nice.
So yeah, no, you know, it's, like I said, I got to get my game face on here soon and really kind of lock in on racing again. I mean, I pay attention, but not the way I pay attention. I'm working every day.
Well, and since the food topic came up, thanks to everybody that they sent me pictures of their corned beef. My braised corned beef. I changed lives with the braised corned beef recipe several years ago, Rich, because I implored people to stop boiling meat. Meat is not meant to be boiled. So we've tried to cure people of that with the annual St. Patrick's Day braising. You know, braise earns praise. When you boil, you spoil. So we got a ton of people that sent their notes in, and Tina had to go to the store and pick one while I was away. So I got back, you know, midnight on Wednesday, and Thursday right after the show, after being home for the first time in 5 weeks, quickly pulled it together and got it in the oven. It's a good 5 to 6 hours. But yeah, we were quite pleased.
And, good.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah, that was one topic because it's fresh in my mind from my trip, because I saw him not once but twice, Billy Terrell, and it makes me think of the very interesting, you know, going back even to, you know, to the Guys and Dolls kind of Damon Runyon storylines. The tie between the racetrack and Broadway, and the Terrell family, no family's got a closer tie, right, with the stagehands union and all the stagehands that the Terrells,
yeah.
And then of course training Red Terrell and more
and Bobby Terrell,
Terrell,
Red's brother who trained horses as well, and I rode winners for years. I mean, he was a jockey and a guy who. Man, don't talk about a guy who struggled with his weight but could really ride. I mean, was a real race rider. That whole thing, it's funny. I remember being a kid going out. He had a horse, Tony Mack, Red, and a neighbor of mine had a piece of the horse. And, you know, any chance for me to get to Belmont, of course, you know, I took me out one morning and got to meet Red, and that's when I learned about the whole Broadway connection and everything. And that's one thing about racetrack people. A kid comes around and just shows any real interest, like a real spark of like, man, like they love this atmosphere, this game. They're embraced. I can't say how many times in my life as a kid, Billy Turner with Seattle Slough the week of the Belmont, letting me, you know, go and look at him in the stall, and like, you know, they didn't want me to get too close to him because he would bite you. But yes, Lenny Imperio, as a kid, my aunt dated a guy. They had a horse named I'll Make It Up, and that was because when he'd go collect debts, they'd go, please, no, I'll make it up, I'll make it up. It was one of those guys. Going to the barn and them treating me like, you know, I belong there. I mean, racetrack people really are so much more friendly and engaging, I think, than people realize if you really show an interest.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, that's a story that, you know, has been repeated and framed up in so many different ways. And of course, it isn't limited either to the actual racetrack. I mean, it's true. It's true in any arena. It's true in the breeding side we had that terrific conversation last week. And I'm sure, in fact, I'm going to guess that you probably know, at Sequel, Becky Thomas's, well, son-in-law, as it turned out, he was burying the lead a little bit. But we had the nicest conversation after Becky had had, the million-dollar Artemis Agraterra baby, Carlos Manresa. Mm-hmm. And he he started dating Becky's daughter. And next thing you knew, he gave up his law career.
Wow. Wow.
because he got intrigued by the consignment life, as it were.
Well, you know, just what you're saying, these connections. So I don't know how we got on the topic the other day. Carmelo and I were talking, and, you know, Dominic Galluccio is from Germantown, New York, upstate.
Right.
About 25 minutes, half hour from me. And he, you know, I actually paid my respects. His grave is about a mile from Claremont Farm. When I was a kid, there was a guy on Long Island who wanted to go there to look at two-year-olds in training. Mike Hernandez wasn't at Belmont yet. He was still the farm trainer at Claremont. Dominic Galluccio would ride his bike over there. Mr. Hernandez gave him a job. He learned to gallop horses at Claremont Farm. They have like a three-quarter of a mile track. I go there to get on these two-year-olds and, you know, to give the guy my opinion like I was some expert at, like, you know, 13 years old, right? And who was there but Dominic? And that's when I met Mr. Hernandez. And I thought Dominic was training to be a jockey, and he looked good on horses. I don't know how many people remember what a good exercise rider Dominic was. And I'm thinking, wow, he's a jockey in training, and he was pretty cool. So now flash forward 3 years later, I get to Belmont, or 2 years later, I get to Belmont. And now they're at Belmont. Mr. Hernandez went there. He's training Asunta Lewis, Dr. DeLuke's horses. And now Dominic had become his assistant. But Dominic came from the farm with Mr. Hernandez, and that's where he grew up, in Germantown. And I've known Dominic, or knew Dominic and Mr. Hernandez, since I'm, 12 or 13 years old. And then, you know, to win races for Dominic over the years. And, I mean, it's amazing how the paths intersect and, you know, kind of we're all woven through the fabric of each other's lives.
Well, exactly. I told that story just recently. In fact, in a similar vein involving Dominic, I told you this. In fact, it might have been with you a few weeks ago, the anniversary of his passing was last week.
Yeah. Yep.
And the fact that as we were all kind of reacting at the time, I got a text and from somebody that, you know, said how much, you know, they were going to miss Dominic and you know, the time, you know, they were together and this and that. And I was completely, you know, sort of taken by surprise. It was from Gary Young.
Yeah, see, I remember now. You told me this two weeks ago. Yeah.
And I said to myself, how the hell? And I had to call Gary. I said, how did you know Dominic that well? He came out to California, came out to Del Mar as an exercise rider one summer, and they roommates. Stayed friends for 35 years.
Phenomenal. I mean, and again, Dominic, you know, obviously became a terrific horse trainer. And when he was a kid as an exercise rider, he was as good. I think he could have went either direction. He could have been a jockey, or he could have been a trainer. I mean, he might not have done it forever because of weight or whatever, but I mean, he could really, really ride.
Oh, you could. He looked great on a horse too, with the cigar clenched in his teeth.
Well, you know, the big joke was, if you go back and look at the old Naira media guides, it says, you know, born Palermo, Sicily. He was born in Germantown, upstate New York, in you know, Columbia County. And I called him out on it one day, and he goes, "Hey, it's from The Godfather. They don't know." You know, he thought it was the funniest thing. He thought that was the greatest joke.
he had some sense of humor, boy. There's passings, there's passings all the time, of racetrackers, and that one shook people up as much Rich, as anything really in my memory.
It was too quick. He was far too young. It was just such a shock. And, you know, I talked to Gary Gullo about this, and Gary, sure. You know, being such a good friend of his, and, you know, him being with Gary and his family when he, you know, did pass. And it just, that's the thing. It was like, he was fine. He went on vacation, came home, and he's gone. What? Like, I mean, it was just a very, very difficult, like you said, people pass and it's part of the life, but not when you're that young, that vibrant, and all of a sudden it's just like, you know, in the blink of an eye.
Exactly. For those that don't know, pancreatic cancer, and it's why in August we have the Lustgarten Foundation Day at Saratoga in memory of Dominic, and as a fundraiser, and it's when all the trainers come out and have the autograph session. So, and speaking of which, Rich, the Saratoga season schedule released the other day, and one thing that it seemed like most of us kind of a widespread acclamation for spreading the stakes back out and taking a couple of them off of Travers Day and having them back kind of, you know, dotting the calendar. I understood the concept, you know, the supersize day, but the supersize day at Saratoga is not necessary. To me, it's more important that, you know, every day you come, there's a big feature, and there was never anything more special than showing up at Saratoga, you know, maybe the only day you could come all season. Not that there's anything wrong with the De La Rose, you know, a listed a restricted steak or a state bred steak. But when you would show up on a Wednesday or Thursday and there was, you know, a grade two staring you in the face with stars, I mean, that makes it special. And I'm all for the redistribution of graded steaks last week for the 6 weeks.
I absolutely, just what you're saying, you know, you could go any day that you could get away and you were going to see a good horse. You were going to see a graded stake or you know, graded stake type performance. And I get it, you know, the Super Saturdays and all that, but Saratoga, every day is supposed to be special, and it is. So I'm very, very happy that they've kind of spread that back out. It's too important not to. Guy's got a chance to come up on a Wednesday, and he's got to work the rest of the summer. He could see the next ruffian or the next, you know, whoever it may be. So I'm very, very happy with that.
Well, Rich, this was a lot of fun. I got to pull up because I've got Larry Jones coming and Danny Caldwell. But good to catch up today, and I'm glad we got a chance to put the baby spotlight on Robert and his and his one man show Small, and I'm gonna pitch this to Tina and see if we can't maybe run down there this weekend.
Well, if you go on Sunday, give me a call, because then I'll go.
Oh, cool!
I'll meet you there.
All right, and then Mel could make the Brujol for after.
There you go. Now we got a plan. All right. Let's figure it out, and I'll talk to you soon.
Rich Migliore, everybody. Mig4450 on your Twitter, and that was fun. The links are up. I put the link up at my Twitter. Let's get Larry in here, because we've got – and suddenly – it's funny. I was spinning plates for an hour, and now they're stacking up like planes over O'Hare. All right, here we go. We'll get Larry Jones in, and then Danny Caldwell. And Danny sent me a picture, kind of a scary situation back in Oklahoma. I'm sure he'll tell you about it. Larry Jones is going to join us. There he is. Hold on one second, Larry. Larry Jones, and it's always fun to connect with Larry Jones. Larry, congratulations.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Hey, Larry, this is a horse that is going in the right direction. Bob's Edge is who we're talking about, and he followed up the season starter with a graded stake win. Talk about this horse and his development.
Well, he is coming along, Steve. Now, he was a late May foal is a reason that we really didn't push on him early, and plus he was a little bit of a slow mature, just his personal self. So we never pushed on him hard. He made his first race at Keeneland as a two-year-old, had the privilege of hooking a horse called Mandaloon, and which we run second to. So as time goes back, it looks like, well, you know, Mandaloon, he might be okay, considering the Derby winner now. But, yeah, Bob's never had it easy. He's always had to outrun some nice horses, but he showed he matched up with them well, and he is. He's doing really well now.
This was certainly a nice group, and to me, it was a question. It kind of looked around this group, and it was a question of who's going to either, repeat their most recent performance, who's going to regress potentially off of a big performance, and that's a big part of the equation too, with horses like this, and. When he came running, I got to say, Contreras didn't ever seem, like he was concerned about how things were unfolding in front of him.
Bob can make up a lot of ground quick. The last race he lost at Churchill, the jockey was Adam Baskitza, and he came back and he told me, he said, "Larry, I made the lead too early." He said once he made the lead, he said he started easing up. And then the other horses were way down on the inside. He was way on the outside, and he never really engaged back to press them. But Bob, he doesn't do any more than he has to. He just tries to get up and win. If you're going to get a good workout of him, he needs a workmate. But we're kind of figuring out Bob. Bob's kind of figuring out what he's going to do, and we just got to read and do it his way. But hopefully we're all getting on the same page now.
Talk also about there's two parts of this, too, that I'd like you to kind of flesh out. One is the two tries on grass, and you tried them once at Ellis, and it didn't go so good, but you weren't deterred because you brought him back at Keeneland, as you mentioned, in the fall, and he absolutely got over the turf well. And then there's the matter of distance, because you tried the Harrods Creek, and it seems like he ran an even race. So how far can this horse go, and how much more turf is there going to be involved?
Well, I think 6 furlongs and 3 yards is about as far as he wants to go. he doesn't seem like he's looking for a lot more distance than that. We kind of hoped he would. Pedigree-wise, with Super Saver on the top side, Bluegrass Cat on the bottom side, you'd think maybe 6 furlongs would not be his limit, but I think that's the limit Bob wants to do. But we did run him on the grass at Ellis Park. He did not run a jump the first half of the race, but he did make up about 8 lengths the last half, so at least it showed us he could handle the turf. So what a lot of people did not know, thanks to us having some friends at Margot Stud in Lexington, we sent Bob to them for about 3 weeks to practice on their turf course at their farm. They kept him and galloped him, and they worked him for us, and then they worked him the second time, and their manager out there, which is an old trainer friend of mine, Richard Budge, called me and said, "Larry," he said, "our second work was much better." He said, "I think he's ready for the grass now." So we brought him back because we were trying to get him ready for Kentucky Downs for the high-priced purses they had down there on the turf. And as it turned out, we got excluded from the race we were looking at because he had no turf earnings. So then when we came back to Keeneland, the race that we were looking for just happened to be written on the turf. So we tried him again, and of course a lot of people was off of him because of his poor performance. And but he did set back. He made that one late run and beat some nice horses that day and come running hard. So Bob is the kind that can do either way. And I do think the competitive edges, if you look at them, their numbers are really good on synthetic. So I think Bob can handle more than one surface. But I do think we need to make sure we keep it at 6 furlongs or less. He doesn't want to go a lot less, 5.5. He kind of needs that to unleash his run. But if 5.5, 6 furlongs, we're going to try to keep him at, whether it be grass or dirt.
Well, and I'm glad I asked, because it did seem, I mean, that performance at Keeneland, it seemed like this is one of those horses that might, you know, that might move interchangeably. You think about what Michelle Lovell's got over at Fairgrounds with Just Might. She's kind of moved interchangeably as well with him. So this will be fun to watch. I mean, to have a 4-year-old, you know, kind of take this next step. He got up to a 98 buyer. So, you know, he's starting to shoulder up into the right territory. And, he's run 13 times. He's obviously, even for a late starter, you know, that's nice in the winter of a 4-year-old year. Talk about these owners, the Freenies and their partner.
Well, this is the very first horse I've ever had from Mr. and Mrs. Freeney. They are in the cattle business and in the farming business. And it just happens that one of the gentlemen that's partners with him on some cattle are friends of mine, and plus the guy that helps manage his horse business for him, I have trained for, and he's even trained for me. We've traded horses around for about 18 years. So that's how I happen to have Bob, basically our friends, mutual friends, had suggested me take him, and so I did. And but he's a super nice gentleman, Mr. Freen, he is, and his wife. It works out really good, and I think this is probably the best horse that he's had. He's had a few other horses, but I think this is probably the best racer that he's kept to run. He has a few brood mares that he sells foals from. It's good, and it's a pleasure to get to do this for him.
Well, that's great, and also for you. I mean, this is the first graded stake win since Street Band.
Yes, I was starting to know what it felt like, it is good, and you know, I only have 8 horses in training now. We're keeping on closing down and easing out and moving into a situation where I'm going to train mostly my own horses. And because I'm getting old, Steve, it's time for me to slow down and at least watch life pass by a little instead of just hurry through it with my eyes closed.
I love that. Considering the couple of spills that you had in the mornings, maybe that's not such a bad plan. It's funny because when I back in December, I ran into you at the beginning of the meet, and you told me that you were having this plan, and it certainly hasn't deterred the season for you. You've had, the horses have run well with a couple of dozen starters.
We have. It's been fun. And I laugh and tell people, you know, on Bob, I said, you know, Bob is maybe one horse out of 1,000. And I said, but when you only have to train 8 to get him, I said, boy, that's really the life there, you know. So, yeah. We're enjoying it. And what horses we do have in the barn, they are some runners. You know, I still have a couple for Fox Hill Farm. And they're good. And in life right now, really, it's very enjoyable for me right now. This is a good time in my life.
Well, you got as much success as anybody of your generation, obviously, and to kind of pick and choose and move it at your own, you know, at your own pace. I'm sure plenty of people are envious.
Like I said, It's time to set back and hopefully smell the roses a little bit. So yeah, it's good.
I love it. Well, you got a couple of maidens knocking on the door. Let's check on a couple of these. Nothing's entered yet for the next week, but Madeline's Magic comes out of a third a couple of weeks ago, and you had a nice placement with Salute the Flag. I think Sweet Tea ran back, though, right? Yeah, Sweet Tea ran back.
She did. Yeah, she did, and she kind of threw in a clunker, and she's one of those that wants to have the engine, and but I had two horses in the race that both liked the engine, and Sweet Tea was drawn the outside. The other horse broke really sharp, and so it was just it was a perfect situation to let Sweet Tea just set off the pace just a little, which she did. But she didn't remember to come from off the pace. She just was off the pace, and she never run up in there. And we're trying to practice that a little in the morning, trying to get her to set and pass when we want her to. But she has a lot of talent. She's an end of mischief. She has a lot of speed to her. So, but she's hopefully we're going to get another race out of her here at Oaklawn. Salute the Flag. Possibly we'll have to go to Keeneland to find her next race. The last race here, she was the only entry in the race. So she may have to go to Keeneland to catch her next race. Madeline's Magic, she definitely will be going to Keeneland to try grass again. You know, she was entered on grass her very first race, and it was taken off, and she runs second on the dirt. So, therefore, we did go ahead and bring her to Oaklawn, thinking, okay, she can do dirt as well. But she's a hard spun, and she comes out of an elusive quality mare. And so you got grass just top and bottom. And she acts like a grass horse. She moves like a grass horse. So her next start will be at Keeneland on the turf, hopefully.
Very good. You know, I asked, or Street Band came up here with you, and I'm curious, because you would bred her, that Street Minstrel. What about her output, and how have you handled the babies?
Well, to be honest with you, Street Band had a full sister by the name of Street Missy, which I have now, and I still own her with her partner. She's gone to the broodmare shed this year. She had a little bit of soundness trouble and just never did get overcome it as well as we would hope. But she also, then Governor Jones, I let, she wound up being part of his broodmare band. And she had a filly by Summerfront named Trobarrets. And then I trained her. She ran second at a Kentucky Downs. And but when we come to Oaklawn, I was telling his son, Brett, that I said, I think she needs to stay on the turf. And so he sent her to Fairgrounds with Neil Pessin, and she did win there on the turf, one of the first times that Neil run her. So, but yeah, Street Mistral's still going. I don't know what she's got in the way of a two-year-old now or whatever, but she is still producing foals, yes.
Nice. Well, and actually, I'm just looking at her record, and she slipped in 2020, but there's a yearling, there's a collected yearling, and she hasn't reported a foal yet in 2022.
Okay. Well, that I didn't know. Yes.
There you go. Well, you can tell Brett you're keeping an eye on. They're
okay.
All of these babies have to come your way. Was that part of the sale?
Well, no, it wasn't. But maybe I should throw in a late clause.
Exactly. It's a sanity clause. Oh my God, Larry, delighted for you. What's on the agenda? I mean, obviously it's only 48 hours, but what do you imagine, knowing the schedule that's ahead in Kentucky? What kind of a spot do you think Bob's Edge turns up in next?
Well, we're going to stay right here at Oaklawn with him for the Count Fleet.
Okay.
Which is coming back in 4 weeks from the race.
Yep.
Now, Bob, one thing about it, does like a lot of time between his races. Coming in from the Churchill race to here, he ran very big in the King Cotton. But we also had like 6 weeks between the King Cotton and the Whitmore, which, like I said, suits Bob really well. And I think that's one reason when you was talking earlier in the program about hitting a career high, sometimes they want to bounce. But it left us a lot of time with Bob to recoup and redo. So he come back and throw the performance equal to his first performance. And but coming back in 4 weeks, we're going to try. I'm going to try to explain to Bob that we really need to do this. And hopefully he'll go along with the program. But I do know Bob likes time between his races. We have figured that out. But then he'll go back to Kentucky. And we'll see, because like I said, I do know the races at Saratoga, they're like 6.5 and 7 furlongs, so I think that would be useless to start thinking about maybe trying to get to Saratoga for the summer. I do remember that Pennsylvania up there on Cotillion Day, they've got a 6 furlong stake there. Maybe the Gallant Bob is what it used to be called.
Sure.
And in Kentucky they do, and especially with Kentucky Downs, you know, they have great $1 million races there for 5.5 and even 6 furlong. So more than likely, we will try to be pointing him in and do the Kentucky Downs in the fall in Ellis Park. I know they have a prep day for Kentucky Downs.
That's right.
Days, so we'll probably keep him right there.
Excellent. Bob's Edge, and you know, I should note, being a gelding, he's got potential craft kind of a Whitmore storyline, you would think. Haven't had a chance to talk to Ron Moquette since Saturday, but you know, the excitement and sort of the pride, really, that was involved with Whitmore and how the fans at Oaklawn just adored him, and of course what he means to Ron
right.
And family.
I know we were talking to Ron about it, and he said he might have been as nervous before this race as he had any that Whitmore ran in.
Nah.
Because you know Laura was leading the post parade on him, and just hoping he didn't decide to join the race. You know, he was hoping he didn't want to be the first winner of the Whitmore. And but it worked out very well. Whitmore was very well behaved. And I hate to say it, because I thought my horse looked good. I hope he looked good. But I think Whitmore was the best looking horse on the racetrack. He looked so good. And and everybody wanted to know, ask, you know, because Bob dropped way off the pace, and no one was expecting to see him back the way he was and to come running. And they said, well, what was that? I said, well, we just thought we'd do what Whitmore would do. And this is the way Whitmore ran. So, yeah. And so Bob wants to be the second coming of Whitmore.
That'll suit you for the next 3-4 years.
Absolutely.
Larry, always a pleasure. Continued success through the meet. And at the latest, we'll see you in Kentucky.
Steve, thank you very much. Y'all have a great day.
Larry Jones, everybody, and Bob's Edge, a new star in the barn. And as I mentioned, back in December when I stopped at Oaklawn for the start of the meet, I was staying with Hammer, right? So I ran into him shopping somewhere, and we talked, and he told me that what was going on. I said, hey, you know, how you fixed her, you know, for horses. Of course, it was still December, so I, you know, how you fixed for 2-year-olds. And he said, well, I'm transitioning this into, you know, kind of a real pick and choose, and that he was, you know, he was going to ultimately just have his own handful of horses, which is the way he started, frankly, going back to the origins, to Larry Jones. So this is a nice horse, and he's knocking on the door for the, you know, the upper echelon sprint division. And you know, they went fast enough. They, you know, 21-4, 45 flat, 57 flat, and then he stopped the clock in 109-2. So, well, you know, there wasn't a breakneck pace per se. So this is a nice horse. Bob's Edge. Let's take a moment away. We'll come back, fast hour, and Danny Caldwell is going to join us, as I mentioned, and celebrate for him what went on after the Whitmore, about an hour later, and give or take, and the win of Rated R Superstar, which got him his first graded stake. Hour three at the races. Back after this, Danny Caldwell and then Leif Aaron from Fasig Tipton, too. Stay with us.
The Ponce Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. It's nationally recognized for making stallions since 1933 and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading freshman sire, Mosler by Warfront, as well as Divining Rod, Frisian Fire, and Super 99. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to...
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at Parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
3 in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping.